I was just going to say, ultra-conservative Bill Hardwick makes an impassioned argument for bipartisanship.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of the Third Read Podcast. I'm Caitlin Schellhorn, editor of the Missouri Times.
And I am Connor Kerrigan, business manager of the Missouri Times. And Caitlin, we have a special guest with us, right?
Right. Well, I am pleased to have a guest host this week, Bill Hardwick. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a state representative. I'm in the Missouri House of Representatives. This is my first session. I'm a freshman legislator trying to learn the ropes and from Pulaski County and just happy to be here.
Yeah. Awesome.
Before we get to the podcast, we want to remind everybody to drive safely out there, especially around school buses this time of year. You know, kids are finally back in school across Missouri, and this great weather has everybody's minds on baseball and sweet tea. And kids don't always make sure the coast is clear before crossing the road. You know, nationally, around a dozen kids die every year getting on and off school buses. By being mindful, taking it easy, and stopping when they're stopped, we can all do our part to help make sure Missouri's kids get to school and back home again safely.
So how has your first session been? What's kind of been the most exciting thing that you've discovered being here?
Well, I think it's been a pretty awesome session. I like people generally, and that's kind of the coolest thing about it is you meet people from Kansas City, St. Louis, Springfield, Columbia, you know, all over the state, rural areas, agricultural communities. And that's the part I kind of enjoy the most, meeting all the different people and their backgrounds and figuring about their life.
But, what's Pulaski County like? What's your district like?
Pulaski County is sort of like, it's sort of interesting as a rural district. There's the rural area you'd think of associated with Missouri, kind of the northern area. It's more rural there. There are more farms there. And then the part of the county that I represent is mainly Fort Leonard Wood. So at Fort Leonard Wood, there's people from all over the country, really, who've moved there from the military, from the Department of Defense, who've moved there from whatever military base or D.C. And so there are a lot of people in my district who aren't actually from Missouri. And that's kind of cool, right? That creates its own blend of people, which is interesting. They have different perspectives and different viewpoints, and I'm just honored to be able to represent them.
Great, and thanks again so much for coming on, Representative. Real quick, wanted to talk about the drinks that we are all having. That's kind of the theme of the podcast. This week, we all went different with our drinks. So, Caitlin, what are you drinking?
Yeah, so it is the final stretch of session, which means there's not a lot of sleep to be had. So I have Red Bull with a splash of vodka.
Yeah, absolutely. And Representative, you are not a drinker.
No, that's right. So I have what's known as a Diet Coke.
Ooh.
And it has no sugar, no calories, and just the choice of champions, I think. So
I'll have to try that sometime.
They need to pay us for advertising. That was, now I want a Diet Coke.
Not product placement.
Yeah. And then I am... I was a little late getting here, and I had to set everything up, and I grabbed the first thing I could find, which was a mango White Claw.
All right.
So that is my drink of choice.
Getting ready for summer, I see.
Yeah. The pool just opened up at the apartment complex, so very ready for summer.
Well, as we're heading into summer, that means that we are wrapping things up in the legislative session. So tell us a little bit about some priorities you had and something that maybe you were excited to see get done this session.
So, I came with some pretty general priorities legislatively about, improving the economy for the state, somehow addressing what the rules look like in a post-COVID world, what sort of obligations we had toward each other. And then personally, I just had goals of making relationships with people and getting to become acclimated with the process and trying to get into a place where I could be an effective representative for my district in terms of bringing stuff back for them and in terms of advancing their priorities. And I think a lot of that happened. There's a lot of legislation that went. I was looking today, I think, while I was sitting there, 2,000 bills totally filed, 1,400 House bills, HBs, and not including the budget bills that we third read and passed today, something like 15, 20, right? Total of those House bills have become truly agreed and finally passed. So out of all the bills that were filed with all these priorities for all these people around the state, all important to all those districts, just a handful, have made it across the finish line. And that doesn't mean a lot won't cross the finish line next week. I'm sure it will. I'm told that, the majority of the bills that will get passed will get passed next week. But just looking at what we've been able to pass to the House, I'm really proud that we addressed some of those things, addressed, what we do with the federal dollars that come from Washington, D.C., making sure those are dispersed to the people who need them, the political subdivisions that need them, the hospitals that need them. just looking at, okay, what should the rules be for doctors, for attorneys, for long-term care facilities, for schools in COVID? I mean, it's something we're still sorting out, right? Nobody really knows what it should look like in the long term. And so that's important. That's healthy that we have that conversation. And then, you know, as you know, we the House passed the budget substantially today, and that had some issues that there's a disagreement on, including whether or not to expand the funding for the expanded Medicaid population. And there's different viewpoints on that. And I think people have good moral, fiscal, and legal arguments both ways, right? I mean, I can appreciate the argument that there are people who need coverage, that the voters voted on this in August, and that we'll have a benefit with about $1 billion for the federal money coming in. I could appreciate the argument too on the other side that there wasn't a funding mechanism legally in the ballot measure that we don't know what it looks like over a period of, you know, 10, 20 years in terms of our budget, and that maybe the goal morally is to have people who are decoupled from those programs and help them sort of work their way up the social economic ladder and have independence as a human being, right? And have more jobs and have more prosperity that way. So I appreciate all those arguments across the board. And I also appreciate the fact that people have different viewpoints on that sort of thing. And I have a different viewpoint than some members of the Democratic caucus did, right? I had the viewpoint that most of the Republicans did. But that's the way it's supposed to work, right? We say, here's what you campaign on, here's what I'm gonna do, here's what I believe in, here's the principles I'll advance. And the voters get to decide whether or not they like what you're going to do. And so when you get to the legislature, you should be consistent about the person you said you would be when you run. And then if we disagree, that's okay. We can respect each other. We can be professionals. But we just take a vote on it too there, right? We take a vote on it in the legislature. And that's kind of what happened. And we'll see how it plays out over the summer, I think.
Yeah, with Medicaid expansion, that was kind of a big headline for this session. In a complicated one, like you mentioned. So as a freshman lawmaker, how did you kind of come in, see that issue coming up, and decide which way you were going to vote? And you voted not to fund.
Correct. I voted not to appropriate the additional dollars to pay the state portion of the Medicaid expansion.
And how did you kind of walk through this? You know, this is your first term. How did you come to that conclusion?
So first of all, and that goes back to the campaign, that was an issue then, right? Actually, it's been an issue in Missouri ever since, really 2012. The Affordable Care Act was passed in 2010, and in the Affordable Care Act, it gave states full funding, 100% funding, for expanding a Medicaid-eligible population up until just like a few years ago, and then it went to 90% of that, right? And then, so the original ACA required states to increase that eligibility. Now, infamously, in 2012, John Roberts wrote the opinion, and the opinion says, you know, of course, the individual mandate's constitutional as a tax penalty, but way down deep in his opinion, he says that states have to decide for themselves whether or not they want to expand Medicaid, right? That it was a federalism problem to force them to do that. And so many states did. Some Republican states, Republican governors and legislatures did, like Ohio, for example. But the Missouri legislature has always been resistant to do that for different reasons that have been described. Fiscal responsibility in the long run, the continual expansion of Medicaid naturally, right? The expansion part of the budget. And so when it came to the 2020 election, I had campaigned on being consistent with that, trying to have fewer people who needed that benefit or that government program and more people who were not dependent on the government. It's kind of what I said. I opposed Medicaid expansion in the campaign. The election happened in August 2020. I think 53% is the number statewide that voted for it. And so the issue came back to the legislature in January, right? Now that there's this constitutional provision, you shall be eligible, right? And we'll find out, you know, what happens with that. I guess I don't want to speculate too much about what happens July 1st with DSSS and whatever court case happens, what the governor wants to do. I know they're evaluating what the legal options are for them. But then, so there's the issue for the legislature. Okay, do they appropriate that additional money? And so first, I've taken the stance in terms of government that we have co-sovereign branches, right? So there's only one branch of government that can decide to appropriate money, and that's the legislature, and that's pretty clear. So no other branch of government can tell the legislature that they have to vote a certain way in appropriating money. Okay, let's grant that. Okay, so now is the legislature obligated? Well, I don't think the Constitution obligates the legislature. That's a point of a political question is a question at which you vote on, right? You vote on an election. And so the appropriation of money is an inherently political question. Okay, so did that initiative, that ballot measure, come with a funding mechanism? Well, as we know, the Missouri Constitution says that it has to have a funding mechanism on its face, right? The Western District said there wasn't one on its face. Okay, so now it's up to the legislature. are they obligated to do it? So they can't be obligated to fund it, and that might be a different question from whether or not the individual is eligible, right? So the funding and eligibility might be two different questions. Should they fund it? Okay. So many folks in the caucus took the position, and I, and myself included, that we don't know what that budget looks like over 10 years, that obligation the state takes on. And philosophically, do we want a program where people have, you know, government-funded health care that is grows in perpetuity? You know, what's the percentage of our budget that's Medicaid? You know, I know it's largely federal dollars, right? But what is it? I mean, it's grown from 18% to, what is it now, 30% to 40%, continues to grow. So what's the plan sustainable over the long run? And another point, too, is there are actual problems with healthcare in terms of the cost of healthcare going up, in terms of the quality of healthcare being assured for patients. And those are separate issues than the expansion of Medicaid, right? And or that Medicaid is available. And so we think about, you know, the reimbursement back to those hospitals. We think about what that formula is. We think about, okay, what's our plan budgetary long run? This is a lot of things that I considered. So my conclusion is that I thought the good thing for the state to do was to try to be as responsible with that money as possible and think about what kind of state we want to have in the future and our relationship with the federal government. So.
The really good news is that if being a representative doesn't work out, you would crush it as a college professor, because I work for a media company that's been covering this with Caitlin and Cameron, doing an incredible job of covering Medicaid expansion. I just learned so much about the arguments, the disagreements, and the history of Medicaid expansion in Missouri. I moved here in 2018. Thank you for that history lesson.
I feel like you're oozing with sarcasm, actually.
I promise.
I was, you're like, okay, professor. Like, you woke up when I was done talking. You're like, what did the professor say?
I was silent that whole time because I was paying attention.
I do feel like you should have had a PowerPoint with that, though.
Oh, my God, yeah.
If I had known that we were going to talk about it, because I just rolled over here, I would have brought a PowerPoint of some kind, yeah.
PowerPoint's great for a famously visual medium podcast, you know.
So speaking of the budget and funding and money and everything like that, Senator Schatz's gas tax bill has finally made it out of the House Rules Committee, and the speaker said today that he's going to put it on the calendar. What are your thoughts on increasing the gas tax?
Well, first of all, let me make like a meta point. We talked about Medicaid expansion. We'll talk about the gas tax now. And some of these issues are issues that not everybody agrees on. Not every Republican agrees on them, right? Not everybody in Jeff City agrees on them. But I'm trying to take the position that I'm not afraid to say, here's what I think. Here's my reasoning. I'm going to take a vote. And some votes aren't easy, and some votes have divisiveness, and some votes we disagree on. But that's what we're here for, is to express what we think our district wants and what our philosophy is, right? And that's why we're elected, so we should take these votes. And that's okay. And I'll say also, Republicans are probably going to vote different ways than me on the gas tax. That's okay too, right? I respect them. They have a reason. They make a rational argument for why they support it. But at the end of the day, when the gas tax comes to the floor, my plan is to vote no.
Yeah, and before we talk more about that, I just want to remind our listeners what the gas tax is. So the gas tax bill, it's sponsored by Senator Dave Schatz, who is the president pro tem of the Senate. It would increase the gas tax in Missouri slowly. It would increase it until it was 29.5 cents in 2025. And the reason that he wants to increase the gas taxes so that money could go towards roads, bridges, those infrastructure projects that Missouri has had some issues with. It made it through the Senate. It is, like Caitlin said, it got out of the House Rules Committee today, and the speaker said it's coming to the floor. Why are you going to vote no?
Okay, I think I also should make, in the entrance of a balanced analysis,
just like a reporter, I'm going to hire you over here.
No. I'll make an argument for the gas tax, and then I'll explain to you why I intend to vote no on the gas tax.
Okay.
So an argument for it is similar, but not exactly similar to programs like Medicaid. Missouri gets reimbursement from the federal government, right, on those dollars. So we collect a gas tax. We get a good rate of return asking the federal government back for that money. And a good function for government is to have infrastructure, right? We need roads. We need bridges. We need these bridges to be safe. Missouri needs upkeep in their highways. That helps us economically. That helps us in terms of our quality of life. That just helps Missouri advance as a state to have good infrastructure. And the best way fiscally, and as the argument would go, and it's not a bad argument, for Missouri to do that is to have this gas tax increase, get the federal dollars that are commensurate with it, use that to advance Missouri as a state economically and all those reasons I described. And that's probably the most cost-effective way for Missouri to do that. A lot of people don't realize that about a year ago now, when everyone was under the stay-at-home order for COVID, that our gas tax receipts went down. It's been a while since I've seen it, so don't hold me to these numbers, about 30%. And that was going to mean about a $2 billion loss in revenue for the federal government, right? So it's a valuable thing for Missouri to have it. So that, as the argument goes, and that's a good argument. I'm not trying to criticize that argument. The gas tax was on the ballot four years ago from 2022 in 2018. And then it failed overall in the state, although, you know, there were conservative Republicans who supported it and conservative Republicans who were against it. In my district, an argument I hear often is that the gas tax is a tax on lower income or fixed income Missourians. So Missourians who are retired military, Missourians who are on Social Security, Missourians who may be on minimum wage, Missourians who you find often in really rural areas, a gas tax is a tax that directly affects them when they see it. And the gas tax is also one of the taxes that is most intimately close to a taxpayer. So you may not see, even if you're paying sales tax, you may not be totally aware of that sales tax online or wherever you are at Walmart, but everybody, when they are, even when you pay your income taxes, right, that may be kind of a little bit out of sight, out of mind in the way that your paychecks get written, but everybody is paying attention to exactly what the price of gas is at the pump. So it's very real and upfront for taxpayers. So it failed then, which would be 4 years before this would go to the ballot in 2022, when gas was like half the price it is now. So gas is even more expensive now, and it seems like most people in my district, and I try to pay attention to the emails that come in, the phone calls that come in. They oppose the gas tax, and I was also in 2018. And so I think that I'm going to go with my district there and try to, you know, my low taxes, limited government approach, ended up voting against the gas tax. Now you notice I always put tend to not always put caveat language in there, because you don't know what the final anything looks like, right? So the final language on a bill. And so I want to hold myself open for the opportunity to read exactly what it says in the last version, see what changes were made to it, see what the language is that's before us on the floor, and make a decision based on all the information when I have it.
Is there anything that could be put into that bill and that legislation that would cause you to change your mind?
Yeah, I'm not there yet. So as a general principle, as a conservative Republican, I like lower taxes and less taxes. I like less government. I like more people keeping more of their money. Okay, as a general principle, I like it. Also, I like a tax scheme that allows people to save money, to invest money, to grow their business. So are there are compromises or structures I could think of where we restructure taxes, we restructure income taxes or sales taxes or even property taxes, right? And one trade-off of that is a tax associated with the gas tax, possibly, right? I'm not against that. I don't think it's not intelligent to have purism on a single issue, but it's easier to have principles and go toward those principles. So if there's a structure like that has those compromises, I'd be okay with that.
I think with this bill, it's unique. It's mirrored after South Carolina's law. And I think one of the compromises that Senator Schatz and Representative Ruth in the House, the chair of the Transportation Committee, tried to make was including that rebate program, where once a year drivers could send in their receipts and say, I don't really want to opt into this increased tax.
Yeah.
Doesn't go far enough?
For me personally, it's not sufficient. Now, that is not a criticism of Senator Schatz or Representative Ruth. Both of them are statesmen, a states lady, I guess, in Representative Ruth's case. Both of them are doing good things for Missouri. They're both very good professionals. They're both conservatives. They're both assets for the state of Missouri to have in the legislature, absolutely. So a reimbursement, a receipt reimbursement, is a behavioral economics mechanism where people are less likely to file on the receipts, so they're more likely to pay the tax. So what I do to do that, if I do that, I place an additional burden on a citizen in order to get their money back. And you could argue that is we're imposing another required activity on a person to avoid paying taxes.
And something that I had brought up the last time Caitlin and I discussed the gas tax was that rebate program might be really easy for a corporation, right? So they can require that their drivers maintain their receipts. They probably have HR staff that's maintaining those things. And so it'd be easier for a business owner or someone to file for that rebate. A lot easier than for any of the three of us to, you know, I lose my receipts almost immediately. The idea of maintaining all of my receipts and then turning them in at the end of the year is unfathomable to my brain.
Yeah. If you have an apparatus or a bookkeeper or an accounting firm you have on payroll retainer,
right.
That's a lot more digestible for you. Yeah. If you're a single parent and you're always treading water and you're always running around, what I've just done is I've just made your ability to get around a little more expensive without a really reasonable way for you to recoup that money.
Yeah. So I guess my question for you would be, in the interest of balance, we have to admit that the infrastructure problem in Missouri is, it's gotten to a point, right? Kansas City is one of the major hubs of transportation in the United States. When a bridge stops working in Kansas City, it affects the United States economy, not just the Missouri economy. There are rural roadways and bridges that are in dire straits right now, and it's hurting those communities. Voting no on a gas tax, what would be your proposed solution to those infrastructure problems? And if you're like, hey, man, I haven't thought about it, I totally understand.
So first, I don't think there's only one way to do something. So whenever there's an all or nothing dichotomy, this particular language, this particular proposal, or something terrible will happen, or our roads and our life will fall apart, that may be a compelling argument, but that's not the only way to do it. And maybe the way to do it, if those federal dollars are what we're seeking, is to have a broader compromise or discussion about the tax code itself.
We'll be right back.
Americans for Prosperity thanks our legislature for standing up for Missouri's taxpayers and our truly needy. Our lawmakers were right to stand firm against wasteful spending and fiscal irresponsibility by opposing the expansion of a broken Medicaid system. We commend the Missouri House and Senate for rejecting Medicaid expansion funding, which would have brought disastrous consequences like depleting our state budget and forcing cuts to essential services we rely on. Paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
So let's talk about education now. We saw the ESA bill make it out of the General Assembly this last week. Is this going to be the only major education bill you think that's going to pass this session?
It might be the only one. And like we've already alluded to, the last week of session, I guess a lot of stuff gets done. A lot of stuff happens. It's definitely the beginning of us flowing forward with legislation, getting to the governor's desk. I'm not on your TV show, but if I were, I would say that Phil Christofanelli run the week, because he poured a lot of energy into that. Yeah. He worked with a lot of people. He put the effort, more than I've seen anybody put the effort into, to make sure that was successful. And I voted for the ESA bill, House Bill 349. I think it's a good thing for parents. There's a compromise in there that there's some funding mechanism triggers, like the 40% for transportation for public schools. I think anytime as an idea that a parent has a choice and is enabled to say, this is what's best for my kid, whether it's private school, homeschool, virtual, a public school, a different public school, then that parent's the one who is raising that child, who loves that child, who usually knows what's best for that child. And they should be able to make those decisions about what's right for their child. And I was happy to support that. And I'm very proud of Phil. I high-fived him in the hallway, it was a good week for him.
So. I'm glad you mentioned Representative Christofanelli. I was having a conversation with him in the rotunda earlier today, and it was useless to try to talk to him because every five seconds we were interrupted by someone congratulating him or high-fiving him or anything like that. Like, we just couldn't get a word in.
I think I was one of those.
Yeah.
I think I came between you, and I was like, Phil!
Yeah.
He has really headlined this session, I think.
Yeah.
So he might not just who won the week, but maybe who won the session.
Yeah. Phil's very smart. Phil knows what he believes and why, and he's one of those individuals who will be very thoughtful and deliberate about accomplishing his goals. So he's a good person to work with.
And to be someone who is, like Caitlin said, headlining the session, which I agree with, while finishing up his law degree.
Right.
I mean, there are times where I'll need to talk to him, and he's, hey man, I'm in class right now. And then he leaves class to go run to a floor vote. And you're like, I don't know how you juggle all that.
Law school in itself is a full-time intense endeavor. Plus the legislature, plus carrying one of the biggest pieces of legislation to get accomplished this session.
Do you two have intense legal discussions or debates?
No, not really. Not really. I'm not really an intellectual type of person.
after you just get done giving everyone a lesson on the history of Medicaid.
Professor Hardwick isn't an intellectual. I don't buy it.
So after education, what was a priority for yours this year that made it through?
I drafted a cybersecurity commission bill, worked together with Representative Ashley Ani, who represents a district kind of north of Kansas City, the Northland, they call it. And so,
a Democrat, by the way, I want to
point
out.
She's a Democrat and I'm a Republican, and we were able to collaborate on language that we thought was not partisan in nature, but that was good for the security of our state. And what that bill does is it sets up a commission where the private sector experts, public sector experts can report to the governor on what they think they can do to make the state safer from cyber attacks, from individuals who are nefarious, non-state actors, actors outside of Missouri, outside of the United States, and create sort of a direction and a legal structure to those experts improving our security posture, cybersecurity posture for the state of Missouri. And that combined with my Senator Justin Brown's, one of his public safety bills, was passed by the House and the Senate, and it's headed to the governor's desk, and I think it'd be a really good thing for Missouri. And as a freshman legislature, it's a really freshman legislator, it's a really awesome thing to be able to accomplish that and to work with everybody in the process and learn through it. And we're actually pretty excited that it got that far, and I think it's a pretty cool thing.
I've been really impressed this session by a couple of you freshmen, in particular you and Ashley Ani and Maggie Nirenberg and Travis Smith. I really feel like people say that they want to join the General Assembly and work together across the aisle with people, but that either breaks down in the first week or just isn't seen.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel like the four of you in particular, and there's more, but I would waste all of our podcast time just rambling off names, but really truly went into session with like that goal in mind.
No, Maggie's very smart. She's a good person. Ashley's very smart. She's a good person. Travis is very smart. He's an awesome person. He's a good person. I think there might be some disappointment when they learn that I'm an ultra right-wing conservative, but which I, I'm probably one of the more conservative, I don't know, newsflash. I'm a pretty conservative person. But what I came to in my mind is I don't agree with everybody in the Republican caucus on everything. They have a reason why they think what they think. Everybody has a life experience. They have a viewpoint. And from my point of view, I think it's healthy that we have different viewpoints. And I'm comfortable enough in my own viewpoint for somebody else to express their viewpoint. And the way I think about myself is, well, if I'm wrong, then I should probably listen to another person's argument or analysis and maybe learn that I'm wrong. And if I'm right, well, then why am I afraid of somebody else making a different point? So if my ideas are strong, then they can survive interacting with contrary ideas. And if they're weak, then maybe I should retool them. And so I like disagreement at different points of view.
So I have to ask, you mentioned talking to people who you might not have agreed with or learning from them. What's one thing that you've learned this session that you didn't really know coming into the legislature?
That's the hardest question I've been asked.
Caitlin Schallhorn, hard-hitting reporter.
She stumped Bill Hardwick with, what do you not know?
Oh my gosh, the most non-intellectual person.
I didn't know. So, if you're an honest question, not a political question, I'll give you my true honest question. I didn't know how much I really would like the friends that I made up here.
Aww.
I didn't, because you, no, this is, that sounds almost.
Maybe like, the legislature is the friends we made along the way.
Were you edited out me crying for this radio show? So
let me get you a tissue real quick.
You know, you have an impression of politicians as these you know, these people who are self-interested and whatever. They've become cynical and they're products of this machinery. But what it is they're all people. Everybody's a person. And why do they get into politics? They had a good reason, right? They wanted to do something good. And to meet these people and find that I have things in common with people from who I've never met, who live, you know, the other end of the state, had a totally different life experience than me. In the legislature, there have been tough days, there have been stressful days, there have been days where I don't know, you know, what's right and how I should proceed, and I really have to concentrate on that and think about that. But every day, we've laughed, and we've did what we thought was best and thought was right, and we've appreciated each other. And I'm really hopeful for the future of our state, that the people who are coming into politics now have a goodwill to do what's best for Missouri, and we're able to talk to each other and figure out where we can agree and figure out how to sort out where we can't. And I'm just pretty excited about our future.
Now, before I let you go back to the Capitol, I've got one more hard question for you. Being in Jefferson City so much this session, what is your favorite restaurant here?
Ooh. Oh, that's not right. Because I can't mention every restaurant. I don't want to mention one.
Such a politician answer. Yeah. Every restaurant's the best.
Yeah. Hard-hitting journalism here.
I know, right? Oh, I did not expect this. I like Taco Bell.
Yes! Oh, I was hoping you would say that.
Hand her away.
Yeah.
True story. Jeez. It was a late night a few nights ago. But we had dinner, you know. And we went back and we're working on stuff, and it was really late. And I was like, I just feel like some Taco Bell. And I went and I got the steak quesadilla, if that's how you pronounce it.
I think it is at Taco Bell.
At Taco Bell, I got a steak quesadilla, and it was good. And I'm not ashamed of that. That's who I am.
Pandering. Oh,
I love it. That was the answer I was hoping you'd give.
Yeah, well, that restaurant that's famously unique to Jefferson City, Taco Bell. Yeah.
No, if you want good Taco Bell, go to Jefferson City, is what they say.
Now, I do like the Jefferson City Taco Bells, all three of them, better than the one in Columbia.
There's
I will say that.
Seven in Columbia.
The one in Columbia by...
By my apartment.
Yes.
That closes at midnight, and if you go at 11:45, they tell you to kick rocks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You wouldn't find a conservative intellectual leader like myself disparaging any Taco Bell.
Well, Representative Hardwick, thank you for joining us as a guest host this week. We've enjoyed having you.
Yeah.
Thank you all very much.
This was a ton of fun. Thanks.
So for our listeners who might want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
I have an official website on house.mo.gov. I'm Bill Hardwick. we have an office at the Capitol. Email bill.hardwick@house.mo.gov. You can send me an email. And then we got a campaign page on Facebook. Either one of those ways are good to get hold of me.
Sounds great. That's all for this week. Be sure to follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow me on Twitter at @K_Schallhorn. That's SCHALLHORN.
And follow me at Connor Kerrigan. That is Connor with two N's and an E, KERRIGAN.
Cheers.
Cheers.